All right, I think we live.
Yep.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Happy Atheist, episode 6. Last episode I put out was entitled "I Define Myself."
Went over a lot of different things. Podcast has been growing since then. I'm happy to see that. Happy to see that people are gravitating toward it. Man, I am really, really poking a bear here with this podcast. It's been pretty cool, man, to, I guess, engage people in such a dialogue that is so controversial, that is so, I guess, deep-rooted in tradition. It's ruffling some feathers, man, and it's funny because people are like, people are like worried about me, like almost like concerned, like, oh, we need to have an intervention. The way some people have responded to me, you would thought that I had, you know, I was addicted to heroin or crack cocaine, or I was a thief or something that would warrant the type of concern from people. And it's just bogging my mind because I'm like, shit, there was a time in my life where I really had some real shit going on where it would have been nice to have genuine people show genuine concern. But it only seems like people care when it comes to this one particular belief. Because I do not believe in God, because I identify as an atheist, people, I guess, feel the need to help me. I put up a Facebook post the other day that probably got the most comments or conversation that I've ever done on Facebook. I basically was watching a sermon and I got irritated because I hear pastors all the time talk about the enemy and the enemy, the enemy, the enemy, the enemy, the enemy, the enemy. And it's like, holy shit, people. Who is the enemy? And why particularly you? And what are you doing that is of such a magnitude that would cause this universal, charismatic fallen angel to single you out amongst whatever you're doing to somehow stop you because you have this Highlander type destiny that's supposed to somehow affect the world? And not to say that people don't have, I guess, destiny. I don't necessarily think I believe in it, like a destiny, but I think people can affect change. But I think when you give them an escape, people are going to use it. And I put up a statistic about how African Americans are the most religious people in America. How African Americans pray the most. African Americans go to church the most. African Americans are the highest demographic in America that identify religiously. But yet and still, we face the same struggles of racism and inequality. We face class structures. There's gender biases. There's so many things that one would think that the demographic, the group of people who believed in God the most, would have more success. I posed that question. Everyone kind of gave me their own answers. The answers went away from the actual question of why to more of my beliefs. Everyone's really concerned about my beliefs and disproving me when the burden of proof isn't on me, right? Like, I don't believe that there is a God. I don't believe that Jesus was the Son of God. I don't believe in any of these fairy tales and stories. So people are trying to, I guess, prove me wrong, I guess, because it raises your status in Christianity. And the thing that pisses me off, let me pause, because I was told that my message is on point, but sometimes my delivery is off, and that's just kind of how I am. I'm a pretty crass guy. I kind of say it how it comes out. So let me not say pissed off. I'm not pissed off by anything. Someone made a joke and said, "Oh, you don't sound like a happy atheist." Ha ha ha. But what confuses me with people is that they pretend, or we pretend, that certain cultures and subcultures don't exist. We pretend that when your kids go to school, that although you may be a parent that's involved, or a teacher that's involved, or administrator that's involved, there is a subculture within that school that only the kids are privy to. Same way in every structure. When you go to hospitals, there's a subculture amongst nurses and doctors that the patients and other visitors may not be privy to. And I think that's true to every institution that we have. Criminal justice is no different. So I don't understand that when it comes to church, when it comes to religion, and let's just stick with church. I had a lot of conversations with mostly Christians. So let me just bring it to their doorstep. They seem to be the loudest. I don't really hear anything from other people, but Christians are the loudest. So let's just go there. Why is it that we feel as though church doesn't have a subculture? That they are not certain rituals, certain things that are custom and norm to your church that aren't normal to other churches. There's a culture that we've embedded in our daily lives that it comes from church, and people act like that don't exist. I'm just pointing it out. That's all I'm doing. I'm not telling you to stop believing in what you believe in. I personally don't care. Well, I'll take that back. I only care when it starts to affect society outside of your walls, right? So there's definitely a culture in church. There's definitely a savior complex culture, especially the black church. I said it before. There is a distinct difference when you go to a Christian church of another demographic, like a Hispanic church, an Asian Christian church, Catholics, your Latter-day Saints, and then you have your black churches. The message is totally different. Black churches tend to have a savior complex. What I mean by savior complex is that there's this rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall. Because of what you're going through, this is why you're going to succeed in the end. Have hope. Things may not be great, but hey, guess what? There's somebody who can come and save you from your problems. That's been the church experience for black people. Why? Because economically, socially, racially, educationally, throughout the criminal justice system, African Americans are at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to American society. We have faced the most bullshit. So since we faced the most bullshit, it's only right that the one place we go to escape the bullshit teaches us that there's someone who's going to come, or there's someone who's fighting on your behalf that you can't see, you can't feel them, you can't actually see what it or he, that people like to say, is doing, but believe that's there. And that is going to get you through. And I just point these things out. And people are responding to me, but no one answers the question. There's a lot of dancing going on. I ask specific questions, and it always comes back to me. And it always becomes personal. And this whole idea that science and faith are one is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And we tell ourselves these things because it validates your argument. Faith technically came before science. So what faith couldn't explain, science did. So then the faithful people went back and used science to justify their faith. But science had already given the answer. If you had the answer, you would have done it before science had to come and find out. So when people send me texts and posts about, oh, the scientific reason God existed, well, God should have proven his existence before science had to do it. I mean, that would only make sense to me. How that's like me getting the answer and then going back and changing my answer to fit what the answer was. I know some of y'all out there have cheated on tests. You've gotten the answer key, but you want to change around your own words so it doesn't seem like you plagiarized. So you have to put it in your own words. But that does not prove anything. So just want to touch on a few things before we really get into... until we really get into, I guess what I'm going to be focusing on today. Just piggybacking off of some thoughts and some things that were said in this controversial post that I put up, apparently. I'm not hurt, people. My life is pretty good right now. For some reason, that is the go-to for Christians, for a non-believer. The only causation could be hurt. You know how much hurt that you experience as a human being? How is it that the one hurt was the thing that changed it? I've experienced some real hurt. I would consider losing my daughter, watching her lay dead on a hospital bed, being almost 1,000 miles away when she was probably in the most excruciating pain of her young life. That's hurt. That's hurt. I didn't waver in my faith. I didn't stop believing in God. I prayed harder than anybody ever prayed. I watched pastors pray hard, call on the name of the Lord, call on Jesus' name, promote healing, peace. I heard it all. Nobody wavered in their faith. Now, nothing happened. But that's not what caused me to stop being a Christian. So, once again, I'm not hurt. There isn't anything on life that I missed out on. I think everyone has things they wish they would have done differently. I don't think that's unique to a non-believer. But apparently it's a reason why, because the only thing people can think of is, you know, I'm emotional. Although it was me not being emotional is what got me here. For the 100th time, the reason that I stopped believing in Christianity and God was the inconsistencies were too much that I could not ignore. I could not look my kids in the eye and tell them that I'm going to push you into this religion that I cannot explain, that has a huge amount of inconsistencies. It has a huge amount of human fallibility. It has a huge amount of myth and legend. It is probably one of the hardest things to explain. I couldn't look my kids in the face to tell them to do that. I couldn't tell my wife that we're going to live this life according to something that it's a good chance ain't real. It was, in fact, my curiosity as a Christian that made me press forward. I wasn't your average minister. I wasn't your average Christian. I wasn't satisfied with just going to church, hearing a message, preaching whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop, and it being cool. I loved history prior to me ever being in the ministry. I liked history. Some of my best grades in school were in social studies and history. So that's not going to change when I became a minister. It only enhanced it. It only made me want to know, okay, instead of me just preaching about Job, instead of me just preaching about what happened to him, I really want to understand the context of what was actually going on historically during that time. Because in my mind, when I was preaching, if I could connect the two, I could dispel the myth that it wasn't real. Because I've heard it before. I've been challenged before. And that's the one thing I wanted to do as a Christian. I wanted to dispel the myth that this is somehow false. So I felt like if I can meet reality with faith, if I can meet reality with scripture, then I would be able to prove to people that this was real. Newsflash, I couldn't do it. It was reading the Bible that essentially brought me to where I'm at. It's hard to read it. And when I say read it, I mean from a objective standpoint. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but a lot of us subjectively read the Bible. What do I mean by that? We only read it for what we need. Oh, going through something in my life. I need to read about peace. Oh, I'm going through financial hardships. I need to read about finances. Me and my spouse are going through it. I need to read about marriages. I'm sick in my body. I need to read about health. So we go to certain things that we need. When you go to church, the pastor picks the scripture that best aligns with what he or she's about to talk about. It's not random. They chosen what they were going to talk about. And they interpreted it in a way that was going to continue what they were saying. But I digress. That was a very interesting conversation. Follow me on the Happy Atheist on Facebook. If you want to see the thread, it was very intense. But yeah. So I just want to kind of go over a few things that's been, you know, on my mind. And I wanted to shed some light on a few things. First off, I think that if you're a believer, great. I think that you should continue to believe, but you have to have a certain level of skepticism. You have to have a certain level of reality in your beliefs. I don't understand why one has to believe and believe blindly. One of the things that I talked about that I don't understand is that people give Christianity absolute integrity. And I don't understand that. I posted a line that I guess caught some people off guard. I wouldn't say off guard, but it just kind of, it's a cool tagline. Absolute integrity corrupts absolutely. Absolute integrity corrupts absolutely. Sounds really good. Sounds powerful. Sounds like I really know what I'm talking about, right? So let's break that down. So for some reason, we allow certain people, certain professions to receive a pass. Let's go for example, you know, like a police officer, right? So a police officer pulls you over, gives you a ticket. He says, he or she says you were speeding. You say, nah, fuck that, I wasn't speeding. They give you a ticket anyway. Go to court. Cop doesn't have any radar. You weren't caught on camera. You stand before the judge and you say, Your Honor, I wasn't speeding. The cop says, Your Honor, they were speeding. The judge says, I'm gonna fine you what the officer said. We give police officers certain moral integrity, I guess we put police officers on a hierarchy of moral integrity. We trust that they are going to do the right thing. We trust that because of the position we've given them, they're not going to abuse it. We do that with doctors. People believe that their doctors have their best interests at heart. And I'm not saying that they don't. Just like prior, I'm not saying that there are police officers that don't want to do the right thing. There are. But you have to know that human beings are human beings. And we are immensely fallible. We will fuck shit up. And it is hard to keep out our implicit biases. Implicit biases are the attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner. These biases are favorable and unfavorable assessments. They're activated involuntarily and without the individual's awareness or intentional control. We all have intentional bias. I'm sorry. We all have implicit bias. All of us. Everyone has it. The implicit bias almost always seems to gravitate toward whatever in-group you're in. In-group is just another way of saying whatever group you associate with. It could be your family. For my example of police officers, that's the whole law enforcement criminal justice community. So police officers and judges and lawyers and parole officers and the correctional department, they are all a part of this blue brotherhood. So they're always going to take the side of their own before anybody else's. Their implicit bias, which comes through how they were trained, how they were socialized. Training is just another way of socializing. So if you wonder why officers, police officers, and I'm going off on a tangent, but we're going to get back into it. If you ever wonder why police officers are so tight, it's because they train together. They go through, you know, between 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 16 weeks, 20 weeks, especially in the federal level, 26 weeks of training with the same people. And you're told that these people around you are your lifeline. And these people around you will have your back. And these people around you can mean life or death. And they teach this brotherhood. You have to protect your own, protect your own, protect your own. So they're drilled with this, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours a day for 8 to 26 weeks. They're drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled. And then when they come out, we expect them to have some type of general bias amongst all. No, they will always look out for their own. That's because of an implicit bias that was impressed upon them. It was impressed upon them. Okay, so let's bring it back to, you know, what the hell this whole podcast is about. Religion. Christianity. My beef that I had with the post that I put up is that I didn't want people to necessarily question or challenge me in my beliefs. It wasn't about my beliefs. The post wasn't meant to create a conversation about the existence of God. That wasn't the intent, but I missed the mark, y'all. I say stuff, and when someone says something, I gotta go back, and then it just went off at a tangent, and my message was missed. I was trying to get to people to understand that in life, the only way to truly have an understanding and to remove bias is to be skeptical and question. So I put up an analogy of, I said, hey, some of y'all know more history about your car from a Carfax than you do your religion. And it's true. It is true. And I hate when we put on this facade like it ain't true. How many people are biblical scholars? And let's use that word correctly. I'm not talking about, because people in church feel like they're biblical scholars because they read their Bible and they got their fancy little notes and they write all that shit down, and that's great. That is not a biblical scholar. A biblical scholar is someone who studies the history of religion. They study it. They go back. They read studies, research. You know, they're going beyond the Bible. You cannot be a biblical scholar if all you have read is the Bible or books by Christians. You have to read research and literature from people who are objective, from people who do not have a gain in the race. They're writing it merely out of their academic curiosity. They're writing it merely because it is their academic profession to teach this topic. And you can find this at seminaries and Bible colleges, which is what irritates me about, you know, certain pastors that went to Bible college and seminary. It's like, you've learned things that you will never tell your congregation. You've learned things that you will never, never tell people. And I think that's wrong. So this idea of implicit bias, how did it get into the church? Is the church, are Christians, are we exempt from implicit bias? Does it stop at the door? Well, does your humanity stop at the door? If you're a person who is a liar, does that stop when you walk through the door? If you're someone who has issues, do they stop when you walk at the door? If a police officer beats his wife and then he goes to work and he puts that badge on, does that badge absolve him from his violent tendencies? No. Things in life, institutions in life, typically enhance what you already are. So if you're a type of person, when you walk into church, it didn't stop. You're still that person. If you didn't like homosexuals before you walked in, chances are you ain't gonna like them when you get in it. And we can hide it under this guise of this love. But if you are praying for a person to change who they are, to change an aspect about themselves that is not harmful to themselves, that is not harmful to society, that is not harmful to their well-being, but only violates this superstitious scripture or moral code that you go by, that's fucked up. I talk about pity prayer all the time. I hate pity prayer. It's insulting. I'm praying for you because you are doing something that I personally deem immoral. It ain't like you breaking any laws, or you're causing any chaos, or you're disrupting any of society's, you know, needed institutions. It's only because I feel like you're not doing something right, so I'm gonna pray that you change. Fuck you. It's not cool. That's not love. That's not you reaching out to me. You know, if people actually listen to this podcast and listen to what I got to say, it probably will make you a better Christian. it probably would make you not be so judgmental to someone who's like me. It would probably make you more understanding. I know some people are thinking, well, Brandon, you're a person. You have implicit bias. You damn right I do. You damn right. I sure did. I absolutely had implicit bias. You know what's funny? When I was a Christian, I was on fire, quote unquote. That's the thing you say. You was on fire. You know, certain things you do make you on fire for God, fire for Christ. So I studied a lot, fire. And I prayed a lot, fire. I was an armor bearer, fire. I was a children's church teacher, fire. All this is, I'm on fire. Bang, 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 bang. I'm hitting all cylinders. I used to say fucked up shit about gay people. I used to preach I was immoral. But I would cap it with this, but come to Jesus, because he can fix everything. And we all love you. That was bullshit. That was a bias I had. Because I was socialized by my religion that I grew up in to believe that somehow homosexuality was this immoral inward sin that was going to kill a person from the inside out. It was fucked up. I would talk about people who tithed or gave offerings, and I would classify them and separate them, not knowing any facts about anybody. But I would make comments that, although weren't directed at one particular person, if you fell into that category, I'm sure it made you feel some kind of way. I have biases, people. I would say today that I am cognizant of my biases. See, the difference between someone who is a believer and a non-believer, it's not about being smarter. My IQ didn't go up because I stopped believing in God. I didn't become, you know, smarter than a Christian. That didn't mean that if you believe in God that you're somehow, you know, less intelligent than someone who isn't. That has nothing to do with it. What it does mean is that you, as a non-believer, are able to objectively view things. You're able to objectively view yourself, because going through this journey of atheism, especially as a black man, like, it's crazy, because atheists are already a minority in America. This is one religious country. We are at the top of religiosity, probably in the world. America is up there. Mind you, America is also up there in the number of inmates and prisoners that we have. Not going to say anything about that, though. Oh, by the way, America is also shitty when it comes to health worldwide. We ain't as healthy as other countries that are less religious. But let's not go there. Stop it, Brandon. You're doing it again. You're doing it again with these fucking facts. And you think you know things that other people don't know. But it is true that America is not the healthiest country in the world. But we are the most religious. But no correlation there, people. Excuse me, I digress. I forgot what I was talking about. But yeah, so going through this journey of not believing in God, I had to really take a step back and look at myself in the mirror. I had to make some personal discoveries. I had to say, hey, Brandon, that was fucked up the way you thought that. I remember, I think I told the story before, but I took a man's rent money because God told him to give it to me. His rent money that was in an envelope with ones and fives and tens and quarters. But because God told him to give it to me, it was right for me to take it. I had to look in the mirror, like, that's pretty stupid. That was not right. But I'm the type of person that I love criticism. I accept it. So I get why some people can't look at themselves objectively, or church. Because at some point you have to question yourself. So if you are listening to a pastor talk and you never question them and you're just following along, and then some fucked up shit happened, you have to question yourself, why did I just blindly follow this person? Why did I just blindly believe everything they said without question? And that is that goes back to my original issue with people, with the faith in general. We don't question. Why can't you ask questions in church? And please don't tell me yes you can, because you know you can't. When the last time you were sitting in church doing a sermon and someone raised their hand and asked the fucking question. That, see, that's the shit that pisses me off. If people say, oh, well, I talk to my pastor. I ask him questions all the time. Yeah, fuck you. No, you don't. You don't. Half the time, people are kissing their pastor's asses. They're smiling in their face and trying to figure out how they can get closer to them. Let's just keep it real. I was an armor bearer. You know, the beautiful thing about being an armor bearer, and for those who don't know, an armor bearer is like the right-hand man of the pastor or the speaker, whoever they're assigned to. So you are privy to the background information in the church. You're in everything. You see it all. And you can't be emotional during the service. So, you know, you can't cry during songs and you can't do these things because your job is to be visual and make sure you're watching the man of God and make sure, or the woman of God. But most of these churches are just the man of God. But I'm going to talk about that later too. But as an armor bearer, you're just supposed to watch. And you're supposed to be ready and vigilant. And like you're a fucking superhero, ready to pounce in action. And save your pastor from whatever they're going through. And help them through this hard time. And push them in their spiritual gas tank to make sure it's full. And so by doing that, I was able to just watch everything. So while people were praying and running around and shouting and dancing and singing and getting excited, I was just focused and I'm watching, okay, who's coming in and out? Okay, where's the crowd gravitating to? Okay, is the pastor sweating too hard? Does he need his towel? Does he need water? Is he gonna fall? Oh, someone threw something in the ground. I should get that. Like, you're watching everything. So I'm able to see. See, one thing most people in church don't do, you're not observing your environment because you're in a place of comfort. Why should you? You're in a place where you're supposed to pay attention. And you can't pay attention if you're looking around. I mean, we tell our kids that in school. You can't pay attention if you're looking around, if you're observing different things. You're focused on the people in front of you, the people on that pulpit, the people who are singing, the people who are talking, the people who are holding that mic. You are focused. But as an armor bearer, I was able to observe. So a lot of things I say come from observation because I was in the position that most of y'all won't be in. I was in a position that an overwhelmingly majority of you all will never experience. I was able to just watch and absorb and take it in. So I was able to, at an early stage in my ministry, identify church culture. I was able to identify and point it out. I can go in any church right now and I can fit right into the culture. I've gone to so many different churches. I've preached at so many different churches that I do the same thing. Once you're an armor bearer, once you stop, it just becomes a part of you. It's a part of you. I observe everything. It becomes a natural reaction. So yes, I was able to see that. No one's asking questions in church. Let's be real. And honestly, there's a very, 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 very slim amount of people that's asking their pastor a question after church. First off, you probably won't even see him or her. They're going to be gone in their office. So chances of you asking them a question is slim to none. Now, you may ask a deacon a question or an elder, or you may even catch a minister, but you sure ain't asking the pastor directly. So again, it's this telephone system of information. The pastor's the one that said it, but now you're going to get the interpretation of what the pastor said through either a member, someone you trust, a minister, an elder, but not the person who said it. Just think about if you were taught like that in school. What if you learned like that in school? What if when you went to math class, the math teacher stood outside the door and taught the assistant who came in and taught you? Would that be acceptable? Would you be okay with going to your kid's school and saying, hey, where's the math teacher? Oh, they're in their office. So who's teaching the class? The assistant. The math teacher gives the assistant the instruction. The assistant goes in and teaches the class. We would have a problem with that. We would say, no, I want to talk to the teacher. When there's an issue in school, you don't want the assistant. You want the teacher. Again, when you buy a car, you want to know who had it, who drove it, where was it driven, who owned it. Was it any accidents, the maintenance on it, the mileage of it? You want to know every single aspect or detail about that car before you invest your money in it. But when it comes to church, when it comes to your religion, when it comes to your belief, you don't want to know. You don't. Now, there's tons of reasons why. I mean, I don't know the one reason because, again, that's subjective. Everyone's different. Everyone has their own personal opinion and personal reason why they do things. But at the end of the day, you are receiving secondhand knowledge. Now, let's tie it in with implicit bias. Let's tie it in with what I said about absolute integrity corrupts absolutely. Now, you are banking. You are throwing a Hail Mary, Aaron Rodgers style, and hoping that your pastor is a person of integrity. You don't know for sure. You don't know what they do when they leave church. You don't know how they are with their family. You don't know how they treat their kids. You don't know how they treat their wives. You don't know if they pay their taxes. You don't know what type of employee they are. You don't know what type of son, daughter, brother, mother, father. You have no idea of these things. You only have the perception of what you see and heard in church, right? But you're hoping that this person, right, that you don't know, is hearing from God to tell you something. And you're hoping that he or she is saying it in a way that is consistent with what they heard, or what they were led to, or the revelation they received. This is all information that you have no idea of what's actually happening. Let me try to make the connection again, because examples are important. If you went to school and your teacher taught you algebra, but they wouldn't show you the book of where they got it from, they just said, God told me that 3x plus y, I don't know, I'm not a math guy, fuck it. But you know what I'm saying? You believe that 2 plus 2 is 4 because they showed you that 2 plus 2 is 4. They showed you the theory that led them to believe 2 plus 2 is 4. They could draw it out and show you 2 plus 2 is 4. They can show you evidence. But yet, if they couldn't show you evidence, you would be skeptical of it. If you went to buy a car and the car salesman said, hey, listen, it's a great car, trust me, would you buy it? If you went to buy a house and the real estate agent said, hey, this is an amazing house, it's awesome, you're going to love it. And you ask them, well, just give me more information about it. Listen, just trust me, I got a revelation from God about this. You'll say, fuck you. I need to know. Even if it was a Christian real estate agent and they told you that God himself or itself told them that this was your house, you would not believe them. even the most devout Christian wouldn't believe you. But yet and still, when it comes to your belief system, when it comes to the thing that you socialize your children into, we're going to talk about socialization in a minute. You socialize your children into something. You socialize your family into something. When you put your finances into, you tithe every week, every Sunday. You give offering. You sacrifice money you didn't even have to give. You invest yourself so much in something that gives you so little information about its authenticity. And we think that's okay. And my only thing I want to get to people is question it. Why is asking questions frowned upon in church? Subculture, let's be honest, people. How many times are you actually given the opportunity to ask a question? Have your pastor ever said, hey, next Saturday, y'all, instead of the fish fry or the children's whatever, we're gonna have a Q&A. I've been preaching about these different things every Sunday. This is your opportunity to come and specifically ask me a question about something I said, and I'm going to give you an answer. How many have ever done that? Because I've never ever seen anybody do that. I've never heard of anybody doing that, from your mega pastors, the TD Jakes, all the way down to your local bishop. I've never seen a pastor hold a Q&A to go over and fact check the sermons that they gave. If you have, now hear me good, people. If you have experienced this, I would love to talk to you. I would love to hear that experience. I would love to hear that. You can find me at thehappyatheist86@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram at the Happy Atheist One, or you can find me on Facebook at the Happy Atheist. And I would love to hear from you, because I've never heard of that happening before. Have you ever heard of a pastor telling you, instead of giving me your tithes, how about you tithe to your local charity? Have you ever heard that before? You know why? Because when they interpreted the whole scripture about the storehouse, they made you believe that it was a church. They told you that's what it was interpreted to believe. And you believed them. You know why? Because we have given pastors, ministers, and other church authority absolute integrity. And it's going to burn us. It's going to burn us. Absolute integrity is going to burn us. So, this implicit bias creates absolute integrity. I have implicit bias. Like I said, I got rid of my implicit bias because I started to challenge myself. I started to objectively look at myself in the mirror, and I had to tell myself some hard truths. And it wasn't fun. It wasn't pretty. You know, this journey of not believing in God, becoming an atheist, is unique because I have implicit biases, or I would say this, I have two very unique perspectives. Not only was I a Christian, but I was in Christian leadership. According to the trajectory that I was on, you know, anyone could have saw me as a pastor or all that good stuff. I was prophesied to tell, that I was told to be. I had pastors prophesied in my life that you are a man of God, you're on fire, and yow, and you know how it go. and man, they told me that I was going to do some great things. And I believed them, because I still would do great things. Now, maybe they didn't think I would be batting for the other team. Maybe they didn't think the other team was going to scoop me up, but the prophecy may be true. But I had to really look myself in the mirror, and I think that's hard for a lot of people. One thing I talked to my dad about, and I feel like he struggles with, is he feels somehow he failed because I am an atheist. That it is somehow his responsibility. And I think that's what a lot of us do when we have to deal with something that we've known for so long, and we realize that it may not be what we thought it was. So what do? You just don't go there. I had a conversation with someone, and they said, you know, I don't get that deep. Can you imagine if you were having a baby and you didn't look into the history, the academic credentials, the malpractices of the doctor you were going to? You just went there, and when someone asked you, do you know anything about him, you said, I don't get that deep. This sounds absurd in every other aspect of life. It's absurd to not look deep into things. In everything in life, we look deep into, except when it comes to our religion. You'll run a credit check on a potential spouse to make sure their credit good, but you won't go in depth with your religion because you were taught not to question it. And let's get into that whole socialization thing. I really want to touch on that, because a lot of it isn't even our fault, you know. A lot of it, You know not what you do. And I think that's a good Bible line to say. You know not what you do. You have no idea what you're doing. You were socialized into this. If you listen to this podcast, I would love to know. When you were born, right? Why does the Bible tell you that a man born of a woman is born into sin? Am I the only person that think that's crazy? She made it tell me that as a baby, that as a fetus, I'm already fucked up. That I haven't even spoken a word, made a gesture, or even had a conscious thought, and I'm already a sinner. So I'm born into sin, but yet I'm also born into a religion that saved me from the very sin that it put me in, right? If that sounds confusing, trust me, it is. This is the shit that I'm talking about. So you're born into your religion. If your mother and father are Christian, guess what? When you are born, they are not taking you to a mosque or a synagogue. If you are born and your parents are Muslim, they will not bring you to a Baptist church. If you are born and you're Jewish, your parents are not taking you to the mosque. It's that simple. You learn Bible knowledge before you actually even go to school. Children's shirts start before primary education starts. There's some kids that know their ABC, that know who Adam and Eve, Abraham, Isaac, Mary, Jesus, Paul, and all these other people before they can actually count to 20. So you're born into a family that's Christian. Everyone around you is Christian. Your influences are Christian. Your upbringing is Christian. The schools you go to, everyone else in there are Christian for the most part. Some of you have even been placed in a Christian school. You go to a church, you're taught not to question. You're told, you don't question God. You don't question God. Is that not something that, am I just the only person that experienced that? Or see, that's that subculture of church that I'm talking about. We're taught. Now, I won't say this definitively, but I have to go back and check. I know the Bible speaks about something about not questioning God. Now, I'm not going to say that definitively because I need to go back and check. But I'm pretty sure it does mention in there about questioning God. And we're taught that. We're taught not to question God. And then, as people, we extended that further. They're not the man of God. So, the man of God is just another extension from God. So, questioning him or her is like questioning God himself. So, we're actually taught not to do that. Some parents slap their children. Now, I'm not talking about abuse. I don't want to put that out on anybody that your parents abuse you because they hit you because you question God. I'm not talking about abuse. I'm talking about, you know, just slap you in the butt, slap you in the mouth, you know, reprimand you for doing that. It's a little thing, especially in the black community. So, how is it that the older you get, you believe it as if it was the truth? Although all those things are true. You were socialized into this. You didn't know anything else. I would love to know how many parents took their kids and told them, these are the different religions in the world. Let's go over all of them. And let me tell you why we believe what we believe. See, we tell people about why we believe, but we never give them the alternative. So especially people who evangelize. You street prophets, you street preachers that go out and hand out pamphlets and you tell me to join your religion. But you never give me the counter argument. Join my religion because it's great. But hey, here are some other great things about other religions, but this is why I chose mine. It's always one-sided. I've never been approached by someone who wanted me to join their religion, but also gave me a good understanding of everything that I was able to make an informed decision about. Never. So as parents, have you done that with your children? Have you said, hey, look, this is Christianity, this is Islam, Buddhism, this is Taoism, this is Unitarianism, this is ancestry worship. That's just a few. Let's go over all of these different theisms and let's talk about it. And let's see which one you agree with the most. And let me tell you why I picked the one I picked. Now that is giving someone a full understanding of what they're about to enter into. If that was your experience, then your beliefs, I believe in you. I believe that your beliefs are valuable. I believe that you have a good understanding. I believe that you're well-rounded. And I could almost probably assure you that you are probably a more open Christian than some other people because you were not pigeonholed into these subcultural beliefs that most of the time have no biblical backing to them. So, I wanted to just kind of go over something that I found interesting. I read this report, this study that was done by Lifeway Research. It's a research facility out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, I believe. Now, mind you, I will preface this statement because I don't want anybody to think that I'm biased. That's all this implicit bias we've been talking about. This is a Christian organization. The founder is Christian. His staff is Christian. His board of directors are Christian. This is a institution that helps churches, you know, kind of better themselves, but through a statistical manner. So if you have a church and you want to know how many people are attending on one day opposed to the other, this company will do a research to help you get a better understanding of what's going on. So they are totally pro-God people. They're pro-God, they're pro-Christian, rah, 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 they're great. But they did a very, very interesting study. They did a study on the readability of the Bible. They talked about the frequency of how people read the Bible. Now, the aim of this study serves me no purpose, although it does. But the aim of this study was to help Christian leadership find a way to get their congregation or get Christians in general to read the Bible more. Uh-oh. They're trying to get people to read the Bible more. Holy shit. Are you saying that people don't read the Bible? Oh my God. Oh my God. Is that what you're saying? Because in my church, I read the Bible every day. And people are going to tell me, when I go home, I have a Bible study. I have a devotional that I read every morning and every night. I'm a true biblical scholar. According to this research, y'all know I'm ready to read this shit, right? like when I found this, I wanted to say, thank you, Jesus, but then I realized he's not real. So, according to Lifeway Research, again, let me stress that this is a Christian organization. These people believe in God. 30% of people said they read several passages or stories, that they have read several passages or stories. 15% said they have read at least half of the whole Bible. Now, I don't know exactly where half begins or where it starts, but for argument's sake, let's just break it down into Old and New Testament, because that's the easiest numerically to go by. So either half the people have read the Old Testament or New Testament. 15% of people have done that. 12% said they have read almost all of it. Now, I would assume that these are people that, you know, probably have one of those read the Bible in a year type deals. I've done that before, and it actually will help you get through a lot of it because they break it down differently so that you can cover a vast amount of books in a day and scripture. So that is possible. 11% said they read all of it. I've met people that have actually read the Bible from front to back. That is a thing. Kudos to you. 9% say they've almost read all of it more than once. These are people that read it once and they went back for more. Now, 10% said they read none of it. Now, how many of us fall into that 10%? So, this is important. This is important. This is crucial. One of the arguments made to me in my post about fact-checking was, well, the Bible has to be real because it's the most popular selling book in the world. It's a bestseller. And it's been a bestseller for all these years. So it gotta mean something. So we said, are we correlating sales to actually reading the book? How many of y'all in college bought textbooks you ain't read? How many of y'all got libraries right now in your homes of books that you haven't even read? I got a library. It looked real good to have. It looks amazing when someone walks in my house and they see all of my books. But I promise you, if you picked out a book out of the middle of that shelf, I probably didn't read it. But it looks fucking good sitting up there. This study also showed that 8 out of 10 homes in America own a Bible. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. That's almost 80. That's roughly 80%. Of Americans own a Bible in their home. And I'll even go to say this. I know people who don't believe they have Bibles, like myself, but these are old Bibles. But I know people who haven't classified themselves as atheists that own a Bible. I know people of other faiths that own a Bible. I own a Quran and a Bible. Why is this so important? Again, you're giving someone absolute integrity. What do you mean you don't read the Bible? What do you mean you only read a few passages? What do you mean? You should be scrutinizing. And maybe scrutinizing is the wrong word because it comes with kind of a negative connotation. But you should definitely be checking up to see if what you're being told is right. You should know where the book of Obadiah is. You should know the book of Micah. You should have read these things so that you can at least have some understanding of what's going on. But according to this statistics that was done by a Christian organization, by the way, it is saying that most people don't read the Bible, that Christian leadership is trying to find how can they promote more Bible reading. So if people aren't reading the Bible, how do you believe in anything you believe in? I have people arguing with me that I'm almost positive that if I put my life savings on it, they probably have never gone in depth on their own, mind you, not when they were in a conversation trying to debunk me, not when they're in a conversation trying to debunk another atheist, but on their own in their general leisure time of reading. Because this is what I do, because I'm a geek. When I'm sitting at home, I'm sitting at work bored, I will pull up a YouTube of a seminary college class, and I will learn about the Council of Nicaea from a professor. Is it fun? No, I like it because I'm weird. Literally, he's on the chalkboard and writing about biblical history. How many people are doing that? But shouldn't you? Shouldn't you know that the Bible was never meant to be a book of facts, but a book of truths? If you go through biblical history, you'll learn that. If you do biblical history, you'll learn that the Bible you have today has been mangled and manipulated and changed and rewritten. And the method of rewriting was someone sitting at the front of a room of people reading out loud and hoping that they write it down right. There weren't any fax machines. There weren't any printers. There wasn't any large press machines. The Bible was transcribed by people writing by hand all day. You got to factor in fatigue, hunger. Was it by force or by choice? There's so many factors that can go in that could change everything about it. But we ignore these things like it don't exist. It is a fact that King James changed the Bible. It is a fact. It is a fact that the Council of Nicaea determined the Christology of Jesus. It is a fact. They determined that. And when you hear people defend it, they say, well, we can trust in these people. Are you kidding me? When does that ever work for anything? If the doctor came in the room with a needle and said, hey, I'm gonna help your kid out, will you trust what's in it? Or will you ask, hey, what's in the needle? Or will you say, I trust you. I don't know what the fuck it is, but I trust you. Can I go on a little racial rant real quick? As African Americans, historically, has Europeans ever been honest with us about anything? I mean, listen, I'm not trying to divide or say, you know, but let's just be clear. When have Europeans ever been able to be trusted with no scrutiny and had the best interest of minorities in mind? If you can show me a time in history, I'll wait. I'll stop the podcast right now. Matter of fact, I'll let you have a podcast. But you know what? It didn't happen. It did not happen. Absolute integrity corrupts absolutely. We gotta stop letting people get away with passes. Believe in God. Believe in hope. Have faith. Those are all wonderful things. But there is nothing wrong with questioning. And if your God is who it says it is, and if your pastor is the man of God that he or she says they are, then they should be able to answer your questions. They should be able to objectively stand before you and give you reasoning to what they're saying. And give you facts to what they're saying. And be able to defend yourself. Don't ask me as the atheist to prove God's existence, because I'm telling you it ain't there. So why would I need to prove to something that ain't there? The burden of proof is on you, people. So everyone who feels as though they got me, you know, I think you missed me. I think we need to have this conversation.
I think it's extremely important that we question things in life. I don't understand why questioning brings about this lack of faith or lack of Christian fire that people have. Now, I've said this before on so many different levels. I think the goal of this podcast and what I'm trying to do in general, I am not here to make you feel stupid, debunk you. I am merely here because I feel a strong urge and a strong conviction that there is intersectionality between believers and non-believers. Now, I may not have the best methods of understanding that or interpreting that or conveying that message, but I feel like in this society that we're in, and the things as a whole, as a human race that we go through from a humanistic standpoint, that as a people, we are better united than we are divided. And I feel as though we allow these institutions to come into our infrastructures and our societies and our culture that divide us. But this institution of religion has been so ingrained in the culture, I think it would be irresponsible to just remove it. I do think it's responsible to flip it, alter it, and make it work in our benefit. There's an intersectionality that's going to come and it's going to happen. I think people like Donald Trump benefit off of separation. I think we need to hold people accountable, especially Christians, man. If we tell white people that you have to hold bigots accountable for their bigotry, the good white people, that sounds so crazy, the good white people, if someone said the good blacks, I'd be like, what the fuck? But the good Christians, I would say. There are a lot of fucked up Christians out there. And the problem with fucked up Christians are, they're typically louder than the good ones, right? Shout out to Patrick Bryant. I'm sure you'll probably never hear this, but he is somebody that I would consider a very genuine person. I've known him for a long time, roommates. He's super genuine. He does not fit what I'm saying. He's the model that if I could go around the churches and say, hey, this is the model that you should operate by, it will be him. We may disagree on our beliefs, and that's fine. But his method and his genuineness is enough for me. We got people like this idiot, this clown, Pastor Gino Jenkins or something from church in Philly. He got a Facebook post floating around where he's sounding like a sick Riley Newton from the Boondocks. And he's saying women with your lipstick is a lipstick hoe and a singing hoe and a preaching hoe and this hoe and that hoe. And he's really, you know, just bashing women. Really bashing them. But he has a following. He has hundreds of thousands of likes. He has a huge congregation. And he's teaching men and boys to degrade women. And he's using the Bible, people. He's using the Bible to do exactly what I've said that people do. They take it and they misconstrue it. You know why? Because of those statistics I gave. You're not reading it. No one's questioning him. No one's asking him the hard questions. No one's making him put his money where his mouth is. And the more and more good Christians sit back and be quiet and allow people like him to say shit, it gives me more credence to what I'm saying. It gives me more proof that this is all just in your head. And you're so afraid of losing your belief that you're okay with just letting shit happen. So, I think that's it for me. I've ranted and raved enough. Coming up soon, y'all, I'm going to be doing some Facebook Lives. Hey, shout out to this podcast. It's kind of banging. Two brothers. I went to school with one of them. They got a really good podcast. Check it out on SoundCloud. This podcast is kind of banging. Check it out. It's dope. I'm probably going to have them on my show coming up soon. I know I've been promising to have people on the show, but it's kind of hard. I've really been trying to find people to come on here. And it hasn't been met with the enthusiasm that I thought it would be. But I haven't given up. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to have people on the show. Follow me on Twitter at BJamar_86. Follow me on Facebook at The Happy Atheist. I think it's Happy Atheist 1. Yeah. Follow me on Facebook at The Happy Atheist 1. Follow me on... No. Follow me on Instagram at The Happy Atheist 1. And on Facebook at The Happy Atheist. If you want to ask me a question, you want to comment on anything I've said, check me out on Anchor. You can actually call in, give me your feedback live. I don't discriminate. Even if you're saying something I don't like, I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna post it. I'm gonna let people hear it. Follow me on SoundCloud at The Happy Atheist. I'm also on Google Play. I'm all over the place, people. Podcast is growing. I appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Brandon Long. I'm your Happy Atheist.